Not ready? Too bad. Head back, face forward, and hold on like you mean it.
Welcome to Review Time's Theme Podcast, a weekly podcast where we explore the ins and outs of attractions and theme parks from around the world. My name is Dom Lacey, and today I will be bringing you the magical world of a theme park that is highly regarded as one of Disney's best. You all know and love it. You already seen the title of the podcast if you've clicked on this. But for our live viewers who are sitting at home enjoying our lovely live performance, they're not actually seeing it for the first time. But we are going to be exploring Walt Disney's Studio Park, one of the best theme parks ever brought to the Disney landscape of theme parks. Many people thought, oh, why not Disney Sea? It's because Disney Sea pales in comparison to this park. This park has Cinemagic, Art of Disney Animation. It now has some sort of Cars ride where a car dies. Not even kidding about that. That happens. And but look, there's an ominous voice in the background. Yeah, you don't know who that is. That's our traditional host, Luke Carroll, who I didn't even do the first part. It's been a while since we've done this, but
yeah.
Luke went to Walt Disney Studio Park and was like, wait, Studio? There's only one of these. Shouldn't there be two?
Oh, wow. You have the excuse that you did just write that like a minute before you said it. But I don't know if that's a good enough excuse. That's how we're starting season two. We've had 3 weeks off. 3 weeks to come up with one intro. And Studio Park. That's it. That's what we've come up with.
I think our views just dropped.
It's a good sign for how season two of the park cast is going to be.
Okay, look, let's give this one a revision. Let me have some time through the podcast, and I'll make a better one.
Okay,
I'll keep
do
coming
the
back
outro
to
as
it.
An intro, and you have to beat Studio Park.
Studio
Whatever
Park.
Whatever you do, you have to beat Studio Park. Okay, that's your challenge for this week's episode.
Oh, the back lot is that? No, I'm not even going to bother. You haven't actually been to Walt Disney Studios Park, have you?
No, but I've kind of experienced a lot of the attractions anyway, because most of the better stuff at this park is just at other parks as well.
Yeah, it's kind of a mismatch. Like, so for context, I've been to this park and Luke hasn't. I think this is one of the first podcast episodes that we've done where I've been to the park and
you
haven't.
Can do that. No, you're wrong. But no, I usually actually, get to do.
Now, for context, I experienced all of the Walt Disney sort of Studios Paris Resort. It is actually called the Disneyland Paris Resort. I think, not the Walt Disney Studios Park, but I've actually been here. I got to experience it all in a day. It was a condensed
day.
How
many minutes did it take you to experience all the attractions?
Look, I'm not kidding. We kind of walked in, did two attractions and left.
Let me guess. No, I don't actually know what they are. Tower of Terror.
Yep.
What year did you go?
We went in around 2010
okay, so
to 2011.
Ratatouille yet. And perhaps Crush's Coaster?
No. My wife did Crush's Coaster. She waited three hours.
Is she still
for
in
it
the queue?
And said,
I think she
bad
might still be in Paris.
Well, she waited 3 hours for Crush's Coaster. For context as well, we're going to be talking about the original iteration of the park, but I guess we'll sort
so
of
none
explore.
None of those were there.
Yeah, none of these actually good attractions were existent within this park at this point. When this park first opened, it was very bare bones, but when I went there, the attractions that I actually did was Tower of Terror, and we also did Rock and Roller Coaster. My wife did Crush's Coaster and she waited like 3 hours for it. But she did the classic thing that I know many people do when they go to a Disney park. Surely it can't be 3 hours.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't 3 hours. It was a little bit longer. So it was like 3.5 hours because there was also an e-stop in the middle of it. So
I think that attraction literally has a capacity of like 800 people an hour or something ridiculously low. It's not that it's that popular.
Mm.
It just has like a third the capacity of any normal like people eater Disney attraction.
Yeah, it's just, it's very small.
Like, it's an incredibly small attraction. I think you can only fit like 4 to 6 people on each side. So the Crusher's coaster, it's a spinning coaster. And
I think it's only 2 on each side. I think it's 4 per train. Like, yeah.
Wow. I thought it was more than that. And we have...
like, because it might be Mac. Like, I think it's just a themed Mac or Vekoma spinning coaster. Kind of themed in inverted commas. But I would say there's 3 moments of this park.
Yeah.
There's the opening moment, which we're going to talk about today. Might take us 13 minutes with how much was there. Then they kind of fixed it slowly, fixed in inverted commas slowly over time for maybe the next 10 to 15 years. They would just slowly add new stuff to try to make it worthwhile. And we're about to hit what I would say is phase 3 of the park, where they're just like, all right, here's a lot of new stuff around the same time, where they're meant to be putting in a Marvel Land, which should open late this year, early next year. A Frozen Land, which should open around 2024 for the Olympics in Paris. And then a Star Wars Land, which was originally meant to open in 2024. They've removed mysteriously from any official talking about the expansion now. So who knows? Fingers crossed they get something.
It's falling down the route in modern Disney times where they're like, oh, we know that we need to fix this park, but let's just hang the promise that we will fix it as our way of saying, sorry, we're not fixing it. They've sort of done that for many years with, say, like the Yeti, for example. People sort of palm off the problems that are Expedition Everest because they're like, oh, no, they plan to fix the Yeti, when deep down inside, no one plans to fix the Yeti. If they do fix that, apparently it's something like
Joe Rohde was like, see ya, I'm going to space now. It's never getting fixed.
Which,
he was the one hope we had of fixing that Yeti.
That is like a good career move for him. I don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast, but imagine being the person who like gets to start the next iteration of attractions. Like theme parks are cool, but imagine the experience of like, okay, you've paid $50,000. You're going to space and they're going to make it like
not mission space, real space.
But imagine like test track theming, like modern test track theming as you then get onto an actual rocket and go to space. How cool would that be?
It'd be
cool.
So
they've hired the right person.
Unfortunately, unless Review Time gets to 1,000 million subscribers, which I think is a billion, we're never going to be able to afford the Virgin Galactic or whatever it's called, unfortunately, because space would be the ultimate thrill ride.
That's
real
true.
Space.
They actually just put you out in the vacuum of space. That is the ultimate thrill.
Good luck.
Also, I just want to point out, for those at home playing the Review Times theme park cast drinking game, which is a family-friendly game, you're drinking wonderful milkshakes and water. We have actually gotten to the point already where I've said something and then Luke has corrected me to say that it's wrong. So when I
might
like,
be wrong. I haven't ridden it. I just remember, because I was doing this park for a video the other day, and I came across concept art, and there was only 2 people on each side. That's my guess. I could be wrong. And then you get to go, ha-ha, it's finally time.
Big sucker. So I guess we should start talking about the context of how this sort of park came about. You sort of know the story a little bit more than me, but with Euro Disney, they have an obligation, don't they, to make this park?
So originally the obligation was for like within the first 10 years of this resort existing, they had to build like 3 parks, which didn't happen, obviously. But that's why the resort opened with so many hotels, because they had an agreement with the Paris government that was like within the first 10 years, we're going to have 3 theme parks, a water park, dining, downtown sort of area. And they were like, cool, that's fair. We'll sign off on all this. We'll get the funding. Eventually, the park opens and kind of misses. Even though Disneyland Paris is a really good park, according to most people, it's not the right park for Paris. Like Disneyland Paris, if you look at Disneyland Paris, it's arguably the best themed Magic Kingdom park in the world.
Oh, sorry. I thought you said that Walt Disney Studios Park was. I think you actually had a slip there. I think you said many people regard Walt Disney Studios Park as a good park. And I'm like, no, they don't.
On opposite day, maybe they do. But what they ended up doing was, yeah, it just kind of flopped with the Parisian locals. So Disney went to Paris and was like, well, we can build another park, but maybe it'll be bad. So let's instead make us improve Disneyland Park. Mm. And they were like, okay. And then it got to the stage where they're like, well, you owe us a second park 10 years after Disneyland opened. So they did what we're going to call a professional Eisner move. Oh, you want another park, hey? We'll give you a second gate. And arguably gave them something worse than Disney California Adventure.
Yeah, I think they would have been better off just having no parks. If you look at this park on opening day, it legitimately looks like... Imagine if you had the most creative theme park entertainers in the world and you gave them a couple of bushes, some plywood, and some buckets of paint and said, hey, make me a theme park in this car park.
That's what happened with Tomorrowland at Disneyland.
Yeah.
They were like, Tony Baxter, you're a great Imagineer. Here's some bronze paint. Make us a new Tomorrowland, please. Thank you.
There was an error. Like, I feel now Imagineering is sort of limited, mainly because of the people that they've hired are so invested in the corporate culture of the company. You cannot say no to the executives. Yeah. If the executives want intellectual property, they're going to get intellectual property and they'll go over your dead creative body to get it.
Well, you can say no, but you won't have a job anymore, essentially.
Exactly. Like, if you look at all of the people who had power within the Imagineering team, they've sort of all pushed along. There's also that problem that they've mentioned a couple of times where the people who do have the ability to get something done, instead of touching attractions that do need help, they instead decide to touch on attractions which are classics so that they can say, hey, I'm the person who updated Haunted Mansion or I'm the person who updated the Jungle Cruise.
To a classic, yeah.
Which completely fine. It just means that other things get on the back burner.
Yeah. I feel nowadays... In the past, I'd be able to name 10 really good Imagineers. Like, you know, when I was growing up and in the first stages of my real passion for Disney, I'd maybe be able to name like 2 or 3 nowadays.
Mm.
A lot of them are kind of more faceless.
Yeah, there's the interesting thing about Imagineering is Imagineering is a title for a multitude of jobs.
Yeah.
I've heard some amazing stories where it's people who, when you go to Walt Disney World, you have the option to book an experience, which is having a dinner or a lunch with an Imagineer. And a lot of people think, oh my gosh, I'm going to be able to have a lunch with Tony Baxter or Joe Rohde. And oftentimes they get to have a lunch with the person whose sole job it is to update the Christmas store every year at the Magic Kingdom. Yeah. It's like there are so many Imagineers.
They got to have lunch with like a budgeter, essentially, for Imagineering. And from what I've heard, it was actually really interesting. But it was the guy who'd be like, all right, we need, you know, $50,000 in rock work, $1,000 in color, 87356 paint. Like, that was his job. Technically, he's an Imagineer.
Well, I've had a conversation with an actual Imagineer. I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I reached out to someone when I was living in Hong Kong and I was like, hey, would you be able to, you know, can we just hang out for a bit and sort of talk about your job? Completely informal. It was just something that I enjoyed doing. And so I hit him up and he said, yep, let's have a chat. And basically the way he said that Imagineering worked when he first started as an Imagineer is that Disney would hire you based off your qualifications and then slot you into what they thought you worked in. So you could be a concept artist with no experience in conceptual design. If you were somebody who could portray a story or you could portray an idea through a different medium beyond, say, like the traditional drawing it out. So you'll see a lot of Imagineers now, they're people who come from a background of collage, photography, videography. Yeah. And that's the thing that you need to have is somebody who can be like, you know, you don't necessarily think about it. Everyone looks at the concept art first, but Imagineers nowadays, it's like, who is the person who's making the soundscape for this area? What is this soundscape? You know, everyone can sort of go, oh, it's rainforest, but how do you actually encapsulate that? You know, bird noises, the sounds of running water and all of that. And those are the really interesting parts of Imagineering to me, those bits that are the non-prestigious sort of background elements, which Walt Disney Studio Park barely possessed, bringing it all the way back.
Hey, we're back, baby. This park opens as part of Disney's agreement that, hey, you need to build a second park. And they go, you want a second park? Well, here's a second park. And essentially throw them scraps of just random attractions. It does open with a few. Like, I would say probably 80% of what it opens with is actually unique to the park.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. Of course, of that 80%, 60% of them are not great.
No.
There's maybe looking like... I would say there's two good things to do at this park upon opening. Two.
Yeah. Well, look, the thing for me is that there are some interesting things, which we'll get into. Yeah. There is some stuff where it's like, oh, that's a neat idea. And then you actually look into it. It's like, that's kind of sucks. Which but the other thing we'll as start, well, let's start off with the sort of primary attraction of the park. You walk through and, oh, Luke, we're there looking around.
We're
here. It's 2000 and whatever. And Walt Disney Studio Park has just opened. And we're enjoying this wonderful opening courtyard. And this
I
looks
can't wait
spectacular.
To get into the main street of this park. I love Main Street. It's where I worked at Walt Disney World. I've spent countless hours on a main street. I can't wait to get into this park's beautiful, ornate main street.
I am not kidding that this opening area is a lie because it makes it look like Walt Disney Studio Park is this amazing, immaculately themed and groomed park. And it's like they've got golden statues. They've got all of this stuff that makes you go, this is going to be amazing. Obviously, this is the
tower,
only
the icon.
Yeah, they have the Earful Tower right at the front. And then you walk into Studio One. So Studio One is this park's main street. And immediately
and it's inside for some reason.
It all falls apart from here. It just, this is... Like, I've experienced this firsthand. This is the tackiest part of any Disney theme park that I've ever seen.
It's the entrance.
This is your opening scene. This sets
and
the
closing.
Standard. And closing,
so it's the first thing you see in the day and the last thing you see in the day. It's bookending your trip. And this is like, remember how Walt Disney immaculately designed the train station to perfectly bookend your trip? To wrap you around so you get that slow reveal of the castle as you go down Main Street. That's why you don't enter straight under the train station. You get kicked to the left and the right because it's designed like the opening of a film where it slowly reveals to you the big set piece of the castle. This chucks you inside a warehouse, but to be fair, it gives you a good idea of what the rest of the day is going to be like.
It sort of does set the standard in a kind way because it lets you know you don't have to spend a lot of time here. Now, I can imagine that a lot of people have gone to this resort and gone, oh, we'll have 3 days and we'll do 2 days at Disneyland, then 1 day at Walt Disney Studio Park. If you've got a sense of adventure, don't do a whole day here. Go treat this as an additional land to Disneyland. Yeah. Because it's just
a movie studio land at the park. Because it's not that far away. Mm. You can walk there pretty quick. It's similar, not quite as close as, you know, Disneyland to Disney California Adventure, but it's probably the second closest.
I would argue.
Second gate?
That you know how a lot of people say that Disney's California Adventure is basically the second land of Disneyland?
Yeah.
I would argue that
not
this
anymore,
is,
but at the start for sure.
Yeah. This is less than that. Like, you can walk in, do what you need to do, and leave within a couple of hours. Like, there is not enough to fill a full day, especially in this opening iteration. So, within this opening land, it's shops, it's restaurants, it's really tacky. It's all of these painted 2D flats. If you think of the best way I can describe it, a lot of people know Superstar Limo. Imagine Superstar Limo extrapolated as an opening land. like a full gigantic warehouse that is just these gaudy sort of 2D flats, which are all blacklight lit. And it's designed to give that thing of the illusion of, oh, you're in Hollywood. There's backdrops. Hollywood's really cool. The problem is Hollywood's not very cool. It's something that works.
It's dirty. It's gross. Like, I love this. I always love the way they explain things to us. So Disney Studio One, which is this opening day, like this opening indoor land, is described as a boulevard of dreams where a movie is currently in production. Explore behind the sets to discover the movie magic. You can shop and eat as well. I love how the last sentence, they're obviously like, this is so generic. It doesn't explain what this land actually is. Oh, a boulevard of dreams. Oh, and there's restaurants, and you can buy your Disney Studio One t-shirt as well. Don't forget.
You can get in. It's a great, amazing park. And so once you get through this, you know, there's not really anything significant to talk about here except for the fact that it's just not very nice looking. You then hit the partner's statue. Now, this is the...
Why is this here?
I can't tell you why, Luke. It just
why is it not at the Disneyland park? This is an insult to Mickey, not just Walt.
In saying that, Hong Kong Disneyland still doesn't have the partner statue.
Yeah.
It's got a spot
Shanghai
for
has
it.
The storyteller statue instead.
It's really odd. So, I don't know why that is. But so... Yeah. Once you open up here, you sort of get a lay of the land. You look straight ahead and you've got the studio tram tour. Now, if you've got the expectation of like, oh, wow, Walt Disney Studios Park, the studio tram tour is going to teach me so much about movies. Look, taper your expectations. then if you look temper, to the left. If you look to your left, you'll see a couple of show buildings, which sort of ends down an alley that takes you to Rock and Roller Coaster and Lights, Motors, Actions. And then to the right, you have Art of Animation and sort of what is considered this area's, I guess, kids area. Yeah, it's more family inspired. So left is for adults, right is for children. But the big center point of the park is the studio tram tour. Now,
so there's only three lands, but the castle, the studio tram tour acts as the castle in this park.
Pretty much.
It's straight ahead as you hit like the opening of the park. It's the thing right down the end. It's meant to draw you in. It has the worst facade I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a worse facade at a Disney theme park. Like,
can I try to describe it?
Yeah, try it. Good luck.
Imagine in big Hollywood letters right at the front, you've got Studio Tram Tour. Then you've got these giant 2D golden stars sort of protruding out of it. Then for some reason, there's a truck right in the center that's like bursting out behind Studio Tram Tour. Behind it are dragons, which are shooting fire at the truck. On the right-hand side, you've got a gigantic clipboard. And on the left-hand side, you've got a bunch of studio lights.
My favorite part is the studio lights are being held by stagehands for some reason.
Wait, what?
So it's studio lights with three just guys like just standing next to it.
Ah,
which is okay. It's so bizarre. And the official name, please, we better have some respect for this attraction, is Studio Tram Tour Behind the Magic.
Yeah. It doesn't really take you behind the magic.
What sort of magic can we go behind on the Studio Tram Tour Behind the Magic?
Okay, so the Studio Tram Tour has predominantly two areas. You have Catastrophe Canyon. Now, for those who are familiar with Disney's MGM studio across the way at America, it's literally just like a little show. It has not really anything to do with movies. It's more got to do with like practical effects and the effects of themed entertainment, which kind of relates in, but it's very much inspired by the showstop elements of Universal Studios Hollywood tram tour.
It's very Disney's version of like Earthquake on the Universal Hollywood tour.
And that's
you stop in place and then they show you how special effects are made. So there's an explosion, the truck that's there catches on fire, there's a big waterfall that washes the truck down towards you, and you kind of wobble around a bit.
Mm.
To be fair, this is I actually really like practical effects, so I kind of really like this sort of thing. But yeah, it's weird here. It works so well in Hollywood because it's broken up by actual studio, you know? Sure, here they're showing you how an effect is made, but then the next thing you see, you know, might be the set from Back to the Future. And they might show you, you know, where the War of the Worlds, you know, the crash plane is. And those are real sets, real effects. Where here, this studio tram tour behind the magic is even less real than the one they build at Disney Hollywood Studios.
Mm.
The Disney Hollywood Studios one, they at least kind of tried to make semi-realistic. They did put some actual facilities in there to film, you know, the new Mickey Mouse Club and animation facilities, those sort of things in the park. This one didn't really have anything real. It was a true fake studio park.
Oh, I got one. Okay. Welcome to Review Times Theme Podcast. I'm here with Luke Carroll, the man who was very disappointed by the studio tram tour because you just sat on it. He wanted to know the engine type. What tires do they use? It's a studio tram tour, not a studio tour.
Oh, it's better, I guess.
I don't know.
Get in there. Maybe it's better. Try again before the end, I think. Try again before the end.
I'll come back.
So you see this, and then you get to go around. You continue on your studio tram tour looking behind the magic. You get to go to a London, but as if it's been attacked by dragons.
So I just want to quickly point this one out. There is actually a bit of a clever addition here. They take you past the costuming department for the entire resort, which is clever. Yeah. Like this is where they make all of the costumes and that. So like that's probably the only realistic part of this. I do just want to say the problem with this studio tram tour from the start is that you've got the expectation of, if you know anything about, you know, studio parks, you've got the expectation of Universal Studios Hollywood.
And you're going to see something real.
Yeah. So this is sort of the only part where you're like, neat, that's an actual behind the scenes look.
But it's a behind the scenes look at theme parks, not films.
Yeah.
Like,
it's weird. Sort of what they could have easily done. And actually, let's quickly talk about the London set and then I'll say how they could have fixed this attraction. But
yeah. So I've never even heard of this film, Reign of Fire. But I've seen the video of this studio tram tour and the voiceover will be like, London attacked by dragons.
Dun,
and then
dun.
Just like a flame effect goes off and then you drive out. It's like, oh boy, dragons.
I think it's a replica of the set. It's meant to be like, if you've seen
from
the movie.
From a film no one's heard of, right?
Yeah.
Have you heard of this film?
No.
Apparently, it like barely even made its money back. I don't get it. Why make it about like that?
Because
film.
The license was cheap and Disney had no movies at this point. Have you heard about all the things where they're like, we wanted to make attractions based off Atlantis and the one where it's pirates in space and all that. And because those movies just flopped, they just never happened. Like, there was meant to be an Atlantis attraction, which personally, I love Atlantis. That is a cool film.
Yeah, I think it's quite underrated for what it was, for sure.
I'm going to watch it.
I think it was
weekend.
In the era, you know, that era of Disney animation was very musical, you know, princesses. To have a kind of more gritty, no musical, like no songs, is very different for Disney at the time. And it was a commercial flop. I think it also went against some other big films at the time. So, yeah, there was meant to be Fire Mountain at Magic Kingdom and quite a few attractions. The Submarine Voyage at Disneyland was meant to be rethemed to Atlantis as well.
Yeah.
And the ride, the movie kind of flopped. So they went, Nemo's coming along in another 8 years. We'll wait for that.
We'll wait for that one. But yeah, so the studio's tram tour, it just sort of feels tacked on. You can tell exactly what they did. They had this there because they needed something to absorb people. And this is a way that you can make the park look a lot bigger by doing very little. Now, the way
it's a 20-minute attraction, probably?
Yeah, it's very slow moving. It just takes you past some replica sets. And yeah, there's another like Egyptian set, which is also from Reign of Fire. It's got like a temple like with dragons. Dragon
temple or something?
Yeah, which has since been... like the thing is, now this has been replaced with a equally as bad Cars attraction. Not sure why. That was a poor choice. They should have just added Cars Land.
Let's take the 20-minute studio tour. Make it 5 minutes and then kill a car. But he's smiling all the way through. But that's my imagine. I think that was the Imagineering meeting when they decided to do that.
They had an option here, and it would have been arguably easier and arguably more interesting. Just take people backstage of the parks. Like, just have the tram tour go around and be like, this is where the vehicles are stalled for the Jungle Cruise. This is where they make their costumes. This is where Imagineering makes their sets, or where the sets are staged, or where things are fixed. And
oh, you want to go behind the scenes of the Jungle Cruise? I got in big trouble for doing that one day.
Oh, really?
And then we got banned from doing it.
What did you do?
So you were allowed to do it.
Yeah.
I thought. Someone told me you were. Apparently you weren't. So when I used to work on Main Street, we also used to work on the West Side.
Mm.
So the West Side is Frontierland, kind of that way where the parade West starts side. Usually. And then, it goes, through Frontierland, up to Liberty Square, into the hub.
Mm.
The quickest way to get from the West Side to Main Street was to go backstage on the Jungle Cruise where they kept all the boats.
Oh, no.
One day the walkway was blocked off, so we had to kind of just do a little hop, skip, and jump to get to Main Street, which I was following one of my leaders. So
we just had to swim across the Jungle Cruise.
We weren't allowed to walk backstage at Jungle Cruise anymore after that. Let's say that. We had to take the long way because you could walk around the Jungle Cruise, but it took a lot longer than walking through the Jungle Cruise.
See, that's always the thing I wonder as a cast member. I just thought that, you're a cast member. It's pretty much access all areas, go wherever you want, buddy. And then I realized it's like, if you're not on shift, it's like you basically can't go anywhere.
Oh, no, you just got to have enough confidence, shall we say. You can go wherever you want if you got the confidence to do so. If you, I never worked at Disney Hollywood Studio. Oh,
are you about to get
day.
Yourself arrested? Banned for life.
I worked one day at Disney Hollywood Studios, but they did have a good backstage cafe that was a lot cheaper than in the park. So sometimes I'd just, my fast pass to Tower of Terror isn't for another 20 minutes. Oh, that's right. The cafe is just right behind Rock and Roller Coaster. I'll go get a Slurpee while I wait. That's fine. Like, as long as you have your blue ID. But if you start walking around, the staging area for Fantasmic, they're probably going to ask some questions.
I remember you actually went behind the scenes at Disney's Hollywood Studio, and you're like, they have these amazing Slurpees. You got to come and try my Slurpee. And I can't go backstage, but you can. So you're like, okay, wait here. And I waited like a solid 20 minutes. And then you return, and you don't have a Slurpee.
No,
you're just
Slurpee.
Like, oh, Slurpees weren't there. Where did you go?
No, that wasn't at Hollywood Studios. That was at the Magic Kingdom.
No, you did and it you were again near the, at Hollywood Studios.
You were near the Little Mermaid Gate at Kingdom. I remember that. And that took me forever because to walk backstage at Magic Kingdom is like a maze. Because that part is above ground. So you got to get to the utilidors, which are underground. So you got to like walk around and about way to get there. And then I got there and they would run out. So I slinked back and wasted 20 minutes of our time. But it's Disney, Hollywood Studios, Disney Studios, Paris, very similar. Because we'll take a left. So we've gone straight into the production courtyard, which is the name of this land. We'll take a left now and we'll get put into a land ingeniously called the back lot, which to me seems like the greatest excuse to just not theme anything.
Yes. So this is, I implore people to go out there right now. If you're driving, pull over. Don't do this. We always have to give this warning because I'm worried one day someone's going to crash somewhere and they'll be like, Review Time Coast convinced someone to pull out their phone and look up pictures midway while through driving. A drive. Pilot crashes plane whilst listening to podcast. So if you look this up, go to Google Maps and just pop yourself in on like one of those 360 little dudes where he's like, hey, I'm a little Google Maps person.
I'm here.
This area legitimately looks like the Royal Easter Show at Sydney. I would say the Royal Easter Show looks better, and that's just a bunch of temporary attractions plopped onto a car park. This is legitimately that. It's like, I get what they were going for. And so many people have that thing where it's like, oh, it's designed to be gaudy. It's the backlot. It's meant to look bad. If it's meant to look bad and it does look bad, that doesn't make it good.
Well-themed. Yeah, that's always the thing I
well
have.
It's just well-bad.
It's the same as the Dino Land, Dinorama USA, where people are like, oh, it's meant to look like a tacky roadside attraction. It's like, yes, but that doesn't mean it's a good theme.
Just exactly.
Yes, it does look like a tacky roadside attraction. If I create a land themed to a sewerage pit and it looks exactly like a sewerage pit, doesn't make it a good theme for a park.
Hello, everyone. We've just finished our new attraction. It's the Disney Sewerage Treatment Plant.
Ooh,
and everyone's like,
magic.
Wow, this is great. They've done an
That's
amazing
the real
job.
Behind-the-scenes guests are after.
So have we just skipped over Production Courtyard?
No, that's... Isn't that... We'll come back to that. I forgot was there.
No, that's all right.
We'll take
so
a left.
Did I.
If Studio Tram Tour Behind the Magic has the greatest facade in the world, this park, I would say, has the second greatest as well. Rock and Roller Coaster, Avec Aerosmith. I think Avec must mean starring in French, but for some reason it's the only word that's in French. Rock and Roller Coaster is not a French word, I'm pretty sure. Aerosmith's a name, so they can get away with that.
But Aerosmith is French. Not many people know.
You kind of explained the other one. I'm going to try my best to explain this one.
Okay.
There's a big guitar, and behind the big guitar is roller coaster track and a microphone coming out of the guitar and drumsticks laying on top of the guitar. But all of this is flat. Like, it's all three layered flats. Oh, and up the top, of course, Rock and Roller Coaster starring Aerosmith in arguably one of the ugliest theme park attraction logos of all time. What is that logo?
It looks like the best way I can describe it is someone looked at a DVD rewritable disc cover and went, yeah,
ooh,
I
nice.
Can do that. Like, it legitimately looks like that. Like, you've got the big CD, you've got the whooshing sort of stuff to be like,
it's actually a facade in two parts because that part I described is just the main entrance. For some reason, off to the right, they have a CD on like a little platform.
A giant CD. It's not little.
Yeah, but no. Which, to be fair, Rock and Roller Coaster with Aerosmith is actually, I like this ride.
I do as well.
Get to check out Steven Tyler's hat. And this ride, a lot of people are kind of divided on whether this Rock and Roller Coaster starring or whether Aerosmith is a good ride. I think it is.
So I do just want to point out something. A lot of people feel like this is the same iteration of the attraction that you get at Disney's Hollywood Studios. So this is slightly different. So they've upgraded the story to be that you're no longer trying to get to an Aerosmith concert and you have to get in a stretch limo
this
to go
is the
around
original.
Hollywood. Yeah, so this is, they're making a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Like, that's their whole thing. And it's like, that's part of the concert. So the backstage area is, you've got all of these lights and
it's not like
very
a street.
Cool. And the original part where they're like, all right, so we want to have this part in the attraction where when we go down, it's going to be like going down like this. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I like the concept. And I think beyond the facade, this is actually a good attraction. It's one of
You'd
the
like
highlights
this
of this
better
park.
Too, right? You've done
I
both.
Do. So I like this
Which
one
I
better.
Think a lot of people say that that is true just because the feel within the show building, like the big, after the launch, you've got like stage lights and you've got all these trusses and it feels like a concert. where the other one where you're kind of speeding through, you're just kind of bursting through flats of LA.
Yeah.
Which isn't quite as magical to me. So yeah, apart from the facade, which to be fair, the facade at Disney Hollywood Studios isn't much better. It just has a giant 3D guitar instead of a giant 2D guitar.
Yeah.
But it's still just a big show building. But yeah, if you haven't done this, make sure you get to the end.
Mm.
Make sure you just see the headwear that Steven Tyler is not wearing. I think we're talking about this on the podcast, but Steve St. John at the start of the show, you're sitting in the limousine, you're ready to go to the Aerosmith concert. He says, whoa, roads are blocked or something like that. And then he says, whoa, check out Steven Tyler's hat. So you're excited. You're like, oh, we're going to check out Steven Tyler's hat. That's all I care about now. You zoom through. You're like, loving a roller coaster. You get to the end. You go around and you see Aerosmith, which for some reason they're taking the bows. So
that
means your hyperspeed limo is too slow because you get to the end and you've missed the Aerosmith concert because they're taking the bows, which is a kick in the face, but not as big as a kick in the face. Steven Tyler's not wearing a hat. All I can think about blasting 100 kilometers through all these inversions is, oh, Steven Tyler's going to have the sickest hat on right now. And he doesn't have one at all.
You're like, this corkscrew's great, but I can't wait to see his hat.
Steven Tyler's hat. But this is probably, to me, opening day, the standout attraction of the park.
Well, that's why it's all the way at the back. You have to get to it first.
Yeah.
It's kind of like
we'll
a gauntlet.
We'll take it to the right, I would say, is probably the second best attraction in the park.
Yeah.
So they put them together, which is Lights, Motors, Action, Stunt Show. A lot of people don't like this show. I have a real soft spot for Lights, Motors, Action. I don't know why. I used to love seeing this show at when I went to Disney's Hollywood Studios, which, remember, when I worked there, was my favorite park to visit.
True.
Because it was never busy, and it was easy to fill a day if you saw all the shows. So this, I have a soft spot for this show. It's cool. I like the effects. And I think a lot of that has to do with, here in Australia, we have a lackluster version that's kind of ripping off this show.
Yeah.
And that was the version of the show I saw first. So to me, this is like a really great version of a lackluster show in Australia. So I think that's why I might think it's better than most people.
Well, the stunts were actually really thrilling. One of the really cool things about this, and for those that don't know, is that this is basically just a stunt show with cars. So
yeah.
It's not tame in the slightest. They actually have really fast action sequences. There are big jumps, there are explosions. Like the penultimate finale is that it jumps out from a section in the audience and then goes over like all of these barrels. The barrels explode and then all the cars line up and they're like, thanks for coming to Lights, Motors, Action.
Yeah, it's one of those behind the scenes, like, look at how we make films. So they do a stunt, they stop, they explain it. I also really like, there's a cool part, which I never knew that they did this. You know how when someone does a high jump, they land on like an inflatable mat?
Yeah.
They do that, but with a car.
Oh, wow.
Like a car makes a jump and lands on like a big inflatable mat. And then that's how it like stops its fall.
Oh.
Which I thought that was cool.
That's
like,
very
cool. I've seen this show probably more than I'd like to admit.
Mm.
I'll be honest. It's in the double digits easily. I might have seen it more than some of the cast members who worked the show because not many people like it. But yeah, I thought this, and especially for this park, it's like a 40-minute show. So it's an easy way to absorb up a lot of your day. You go there, you know, 15, 20 minutes before, there's an hour out of your day.
Mm. And keep in mind that this is the iteration of the attraction where, well, I didn't see this one. I saw the version at Disney's Hollywood Studio because I just didn't have
very
enough
similar.
Time. But
very similar.
Insanely similar. They actually, the success from this show, they then brought it over to Disney's Hollywood Studio when they started closing down the backlot. So it filled out and it shows that this was a quality attraction. However, that's pretty much, that's it for like quality attractions in the park. We then start to get into the more obscure attractions.
The weird thing is this show is apparently cancelled forever now.
Oh, really?
But if you look at pictures of it today, they painted it green. The set looks like a swamp for some reason. Apparently, they moved over a show, like a Jungle Book show that used to be at the Disneyland park. They brought it over to Walt Disney Studios, and then COVID happened and shut down the park. But they painted the set, but it's still just the Lights, Motors, Action set, but painted green.
Oh, okay.
It literally looks like somebody got a bucket of radioactive material and was like, oopsies, and tripped and spilt it all over the set.
Hey, does anyone have some leftover go-away green?
That's pretty much paint the whole show. Pretend that there was ever a show here. I've heard that it may be eventually redone to be an Avengers stunt show.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Because that is now technically part of Avengers Campus. I've also heard they might just move the entrance of the show to the other side and still keep the auditorium and then maybe redo the show, because it would be an expensive show to put on.
Yeah.
And Disney Studios Paris doesn't like spending money.
No. Why would they? They don't make any money.
But from two of the best attractions in the park to arguably one of the worst, the Armageddon show. Did you see this?
I didn't, but I've watched a couple of things on it. So I just want to keep in mind, when I say that I went to this park, I literally did go there, do two things and leave. Mm. I did not feel that it was worth my time. And you get that atmosphere about this park. You walk in, you're like, this is a bit crap. And then you just leave.
This isn't worth it.
Like compared to, as you were saying at the start of the show, Disneyland Paris is a lot of, like they had a lot of problems to start off with. And I do regard it in some ways as being a bad Disney park, but the atmosphere, well, not really the atmosphere, the theming is next level. Like it looks really good. And you can tell that the Imagineers put a lot of effort into it. The problem is that the operations, when I went, it was still partially owned by some co-op that was like the French operators, and the cast members were just really bad. Like they did not look like they wanted to be there. Part of the day was affected by the fact that a rock fell on someone in on Big Thunder Mountain, right? And that's the reason why they've changed all of the scenes from the falling rocks to the TNT. Because the rock fell on someone whilst I was there. And that's how I know the exact date that I was there. Because if you go into incidents at
Disneyland Paris,
how Wikipedia has the like incidents at Disney Paris.
Theme park incidents.
Yeah. It was, it has that day, and it was like April something, 2011, 2010. Yeah. So,
which, if you look at, you know, the design behind that park, you know, Tony Baxter and all the Imagineers, that was designed to be the Disney Magic Kingdom park.
Mm.
You know, it was designed to be the immaculately themed one, like the next, the plus one of the Disney parks. Okay, sure, we've got Big Thunder Mountain, but what if we take Big Thunder Mountain and put it on its own island in the middle of Rivers of America?
Yeah.
What if we, you know, we take Haunted Mansion and Big Thunder Mountain and we tie them all into this overarching theme? We're actually going to design this land from the ground up. We're not just chucking in attractions here and there as the park expands. We're going to create this storyline for this entire land. We're going to create a timeless Tomorrowland. Like all these sort of thoughts that went into that park are spectacular. Unfortunately, the people just didn't care.
Yeah.
Really?
It was that problem of, at the time, they very much felt that it was, I guess, whitewashing their culture. Like this was an American company that was like, hey, come and experience our American stuff. And a lot of the locals were like, okay, so you've come in here with your American park, with your American ideals and your American way of life, and you just want us to embrace that. That ain't gonna fly, mister. And that's then what they changed over for Hong Kong Disneyland. They actually learned something. They just made an awful park. But of Armageddon.
Awful.
This is...
Speaking of awful.
Yeah, speaking of awful, you've got Armageddon. Now, this sets itself up
special
to be really cool.
Which apparently somebody in the comments of one of our videos lately said they just love the Australian pronunciation of French words. So, Dom, give it your best pronunciation, because mine was woeful.
Armageddon Le effets spéroir.
I think it's like special or something like that. Which just means in English, the special Armageddon, the special effects.
I'm going to get cancelled for being racist.
Armageddon, the special effects, is 19 minutes of pre-shows followed by 1 minute of fire.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, guys. And it's not worth it. Like Backdraft, we like Backdraft. Backdraft is sick. Armageddon special effects, not good. It's boring.
Yeah. So the way it kind of works is as you walk in, you've got it similar to Backdraft where it's like, we're going to be showing you the behind the scenes of effects. And you're like, oh, cool effects. And then you go into like this space and it starts off really neat. They set the atmosphere that you're on a space station and they've got the screens that make it look like you're out in space. And then they're like, oh, we're on a space station and here comes a big asteroid. What do you think's going to happen to the space station? Well, I'll tell you what happened. Asteroid plus space station equals a lot of space junk. So it starts at a point where, you know, little dints are happening. It's like, dong, 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 dong. And then bits of the space station start to collapse. You get fire coming from different areas. You're like in this donut of a room. So imagine you're standing in the donut and everything outside of the donut is where these things are happening. And then in the center, you've got a couple more screens and sort of bits are falling and they then have lots of fire and explosions to eventually the point where it's like, oh no, the space station's going to go. And then you basically die. So it's setting up the, I think it's the original scene from the movie. If I remember that movie correctly, they have a scene where it's people in the space station. They're like, we've lost the space station. That's how they know the asteroids come in. Mm. But this, like, it's got so much potential. It just does not hit. It doesn't have the pacing that sort of Backdraft and all of that have. The other thing that Backdraft benefits from is that you're on a platform and once they start the fire effects, it's go time. Like it just goes
and it
bam,
builds,
bam, bam,
builds,
bam,
builds,
bam,
builds, builds, yeah.
Whereas this one is like, oh no, the area is collapsed. And it's kind of like, you know, in a video game, how certain things wait until you turn around and you look at it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that where it's like, oh no, it's collapsing. Wait for like a minute until the entire audience turns around and looks, then they'll do it. And then it's like, oh no, this thing's happening over here. All right. Everyone turns around. It happens. I've never experienced, so I guess it's kind of unfair for us to be like, ah, it's really bad. But in saying that,
it looks bad from the videos at least. And from what from other people I know who've ridden it say, yeah, it's not great. Apparently it's where Spider-Man rides going now. So it's getting replaced by something else that's not great.
Yeah.
They've also got the worst themed restaurant in the land in this area, the Backlot Express restaurant, which literally looks like a Costco
hosted
with some
by
chairs chucked in the middle.
Sponsored by Kit Kat.
It's hosted by Kit Kat.
What? Yep, that makes sense.
Oh, and Motors Action Stunt Show Spectacular is presented by Vauxhall. I don't know who that is.
Oh. But Dom, how could we forget the catering explanation for the Backlot Express restaurant, which says, all the organized chaos of a film accessory shop.
Huh?
That's the description for the restaurant.
And then in brackets, has hot and cold sandwiches and ice creams. Why don't they just say hot and cold sandwiches and ice creams? Just
The other restaurant in this land also has sandwiches and hot dogs and salads. And then the other one also has pizzas and hot dogs and salads, or only the most premium of food offerings in the back lot.
It is. You can definitely tell they sat down and it's like, what do people want from this park? Oh, it's a studio backlit. Studios are from the US. Oh, awesome. Now we can do crappy fast food. Get those burgers, pizzas.
It's literally the cliche theme park food, which I feel in recent years, parks have been trying to break out of that. Hot dogs, pizzas, and this one just kind of embraced that.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the back lot. We'll go back to production courtyard now. I think there's two other things really here. One's the television production tour, which is just a walkthrough experience. Very similar to the television tour that used to be at Disney Hollywood Studios, where they kind of walk you through, oh, here's how we make television. And then the last set was where they filmed some of the stuff for the Disney Channel in Paris. But then they were like, oh, we don't feel like filming here anymore. So it just became a generic set.
Notice
essentially
they've got a little thing next to this attraction that they've actually highlighted new concept. It's really random. I haven't seen that before, but
it might be the cyberspace mountain thing.
So they've got as you were saying, it's predominantly a permanent experience where you just walk around and see how television is made. But then they've also got a couple of, I guess they're flexible options.
Yeah.
So they've got Disney Channel Cyberspace, which gives a free rein to your creativity in this new studio.
I think
whatever
that was one of those
is.
Like green screen experiences where like, oh, look, you're on the Disney Channel.
It's Kim Possible.
Yeah.
And then you've
and
got
then Cyberspace Mountain, which I guess is similar to what was at Disney Quest.
Yeah.
So that used to be you would build a roller coaster and then they had like a simulator that you would ride. I did a big regret when I did that because I was like, haha, simulators, this won't do anything. So I put like all the loops in that I could to try to make something really intense, but I didn't realize that simulator can actually go upside down and do full flips. It's not like a traditional simulator that goes like this. It can just like washing machine you. So I regretted making the most intense coaster I could.
Then outside of the television studios, you've got Cinemagic. Now, this is actually a pretty cool concept. So
yeah, I like this show.
The problem, though, is so the show is, it pays tribute to the magic of movies and it goes through a lot of classic movies. And basically what it is it starts off and you're watching these films and they're like, come and watch. And then they've got a person who gets up and they're on their phone. They're like, hello, hello. I can't hear you. Sorry, I'm at Disney. I'm on the phone. And they're like setting it up as if this is just some really rude person. And then they walk on stage. Something happens and they get like absorbed into the screen.
Yeah.
And then it's them like going through all of these different sort of experiences. You know, they're in some really old black and white films and then they end up in like, you know, Fantasmic and all of that. Really cool idea. The problem though is like 1 minute of it requires anything practical. So it's just basically like watching a movie.
Yeah, for the rest. It is just a cinema.
And if you look at this theater, it's huge
for some reason.
It's gigantic. And this is also a 25-minute show.
Yeah. They like to put long shows in this park to just suck up people's time. Which this, this is probably one of the better things in the park, and it's still just the definition of okay. I like the idea, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, they could have done a bit more to make it that interactivity between the guests in person and the screen experience. Because it is a cool idea to have this live action interacting with the screen. Very similar to one of the coolest ones that I feel did it the best. I don't know if you've ever seen it, Terminator.
Yeah.
At the Universal Parks.
I saw it.
Did we see that in Paris?
Tokyo.
At Tokyo, yeah.
Tokyo, you know, a Osaka.
Where, you know, the trans, what's Arnold Schwarzenegger's character? Is it T-1000? I think. Yeah. So he like rides through the screen on a motorcycle and then like later he goes back into the screen and it transforms from a practical on an actual motorbike actor into the screen where you keep seeing him riding. And they got all these sections where they're interacting with these giant wraparound 3D screens. And it's awesome because it's partnering the whole way through, where this is kind of like, you know, we kind of like that idea, but then it's too expensive to do much more. Like, it's the cheapest way to do that show.
It's very similar in a way to imagine PhilharMagic without the special effects. So, and that's the problem I get at, is I love this idea and I love the film watching it. I'm like, this is great. But it could just be a film. Like, you don't go to a theme park.
Doesn't add much.
To spend 25 minutes just watching a screen. Like, I guess you're used to it, Epcot. That's the 360 theaters in the round where it's like, look at Canada.
Spend three hours of your day doing that at Epcot back in the day.
But I don't know. It's just something about this idea. Just, it seems half-baked. I love it. I think it's a really cool idea. Just add a little bit more. However, it's gone now, so you can't experience it.
Can't.
Now, I was panicking.
Dom, we got to talk about the catering, because guess what they also have in this land?
Oh, what?
Food trucks selling pizza, hot dogs, salads, and desserts.
Oh, yum, yum,
that
yum.
That sounds very similar.
Have you ever had a Disney salad? They're not good.
Yeah. What has happened to your life if you're at this stage where you're eating a Disney salad? Is that like 2 weeks into your Disney trip?
Yes, it
happened. When you're an international and all you've eaten is trash for like 2 weeks. You just want anything that's vegetable.
I don't know at all. Anyone who's gone to like Walt Disney World for 2 weeks and not hit the point where they're like, I just can't do it. I can't eat any more of this food. It's so rich.
Every time I go, the first few days, my tummy's like, stop. What are you doing to me?
Also, the problem is, whenever I come back from a Disney trip, I put on a huge amount of weight afterwards, because your stomach just expands from American food.
More.
Like, it's so heavy, but it's so filling, and your body's like, oh my gosh, this makes you good.
So, so we've got the last land, the last land of Walt Disney Studios, Paris.
Mm.
This is kind of, design seems to be, to me, the one where they're like, we haven't got much for kids. Put in one kiddie flat ride. Okay, good enough. Now we have something for kids.
It's Aladdin's Flying Carpets over Agrabah, which is a 2D flat.
Which, there's three versions of this ride in the world. So there's the one at Magic Kingdom, which is okay, I guess. It's just kind of there in the middle of Adventureland. Then there's the one in Paris, which is the best themed, but it's still just a spinner. Mm. And then there's this one where you're spinning around flats and the Dan Castellaneta genie is yelling at you.
Yeah, he's like yelling instructions to be like, all right, I need you to put up your hands. I need you to do this. I don't know what the script is, but he's saying it.
It's very, I don't know how to explain. It seems like they're like, interactive rides are such a big thing nowadays. Mm. We better do it. Because there is a spinner at Islands of Adventure, which is actually interactive.
Oh, wow.
It's called like, the Dr. Seuss book, Red Fish, Blue Fish, One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish? It's like that. But it'll be like, dun, dun, dun. It'll play this song. And then it's like, everybody up. And then you go up. And if you don't, it sprays water. And you get hit by the water if you do like what it says at the right times.
That's
cool. It almost feels like they'll try to go something like that, but just had Dan Castellaneta in the studio. And we're like, I just yell at these guests in genie's voice for some reason.
People love the genie. Now yell at
them. There's something we haven't talked about. Very important. Disney's Fast Pass. Not a thing anymore.
Especially not
at Paris, where let's not talk about that because we'll be too angry. We'll get in trouble. Of the new FastPass system in Paris.
Wait.
But this park opened with FastPass, of course, which two attractions. There's only two.
Yeah.
So we better make sure it's to the big e-ticket experiences. So Rock and Roller Coaster. Yeah, that makes sense. Mm. What else? Maybe Studio Tram Tour?
Yeah.
Maybe, no. I don't know, one of the show?
No.
Flying Carpets over Agrabah.
Flying
That's the other FastPass attraction.
Sorry.
Flying Carpets over Agrabah.
What? Who's getting a fast pass for this? Shit, reveal yourself.
Like, I guess if you've... Yeah. I don't get it. Why even... Just don't have fast pass in this park at that stage.
No, it's not
worth it. Two attractions, which you... If there's only two, surely Rock and Roller Coaster is going to be sold out within 2 minutes of park opening. I guess this park was never busy.
Mm.
But... And then just to go, imagine walking in and knowing the only fast pass you can get is to a spinner flat ride.
Yeah. The other problem you have as well is that With FastPass, I feel like Disney felt like they had to have it in there because it sort of adds to the value of the park. It's like, come to our park. Yeah. We have FastPass. They did the exact same thing with Hong Kong Disneyland, where you could get a FastPass to, I believe it was Space Mountain Buzz? And Pooh and Buzz.
Oh, yeah.
There were like three attractions. And it's like, at that point, why?
Why bother?
Like, yeah. Even attractions that were like added later.
Did it. Yeah, because Disney's known for it. It's free, you know?
Mm.
Disney's known for this free FastPass system where you skip the queues and then they'd realize, oh, we don't really need it at these parks, but I guess we better put it in anyway.
I got one day, whenever I went to Hong Kong Disneyland, I went there like 100 times in the span of 6 months. So I was obsessed.
Oh,
I got to a point where cast members recognized me and they would be like, oh, hey, man, what are you here doing today? Like, are you doing photography and all of that? Like, there was a person who, Sonny, the piano player on Main Street, he was a legacy cast member for Hong Kong Disneyland. Every time he would see me, he'd just like stop and have a chat. He'd be like, oh, yeah. You're back here. And yeah, oh, you'll have to, you know, send through those photos one day. Like, I don't know how. Yeah. I was like, send them to Disney. But I would just always go in, like, I'd relations. Give compliments to cast members. There was one day where there was like this random guy who I'd never seen playing Scar before. He must have been like the understudy of the understudy. He was phenomenal. So I gave him a compliment. And then they ran out after me as I was leaving guest relations. It must have been a really bad day. But like, next time you come here, come to straight to guest relations and let them know your name. And I was like, oh, that's weird. So we went back the next day and they were like, oh, Mr. Lacey, have we got something for you? And then they just hand me like a basically access everything that has FastPass. The problem was,
dream FastPass.
It was like a Tuesday and the park had a maximum of like a 10-minute wait for anything. So it was like so worthless.
You were just flexing your dream FastPass as you walk past three people in the queue.
Yeah, I'm like, ooh. But yeah, it was neat. It was very cool that they did that. They didn't have to do that. However, there were so many times that they just must have never gotten compliments because I'd go there and they'd be like, oh, I want to give a compliment to such and such. And they're like, oh, wait here. And they'd just come back with like a bag, which just had like, you know, pins and it had all of this stuff that must have just been like lost and found. But there was one that had like, it was a signed from all of the, it was like signed from all of the characters and it was like, thanks for being our great guest and stuff like that.
That's awesome.
It was just, you know, it was printed. It was.
Yeah. Working there the day, because we used to call them at Walt Disney World, a four keys card.
Yeah.
And that was where you would get a compliment from a guest. And I remember this one time I got like a four keys card and it came with like a 2-page email that was like from a guest, like,
oh, wow,
being like, ah, Luke from Main Street, all this like really awesome stuff, which it was always a good day. And like the area I was in would make a big deal about it because we worked on Main Street, parades, fireworks, shows. Mm. A lot of our job was telling guests things they didn't want to hear. Like, you can't stand there. You have to get inside the line.
Please,
you have to get
move.
Inside the tape.
Get off the bin. So,
anytime we'd get a compliment, that was a big thing. So to get like a compliment with a guest email was super sweet and you got some cool stuff. But yeah, we're almost at the end of this park.
I need
to
quickly say.
Which we have been talking a long time, but that's more us than the park.
Yeah.
Like, that probably doesn't surprise you people who know us and know the show. We got two more things to
Can
talk about.
Can I just
about.
Quickly say something?
Yeah.
It's not related, but I just I want to point out that if you go to Hong Kong Disneyland, I did this a couple of times. It felt so good. Just wear like a heap of pins, like wear pins that you don't really want anymore and just like stack them on so that you've got like 1,000 pins. And what I would do is whenever I'd see like, you know, a family or a kid point at them, you know, they'd be like, oh my gosh, can I, you know, look at your pins and all of that. And, you know, if a kid was like really interested in one, I'd just give them that pin.
Yeah.
And the families would be like, it was like they had just blown their mind. It felt really good. Yeah. It was like my way of giving back, even though I didn't work there, but it was fun to
there was
to
like
just
a,
feel
there
like
was a
I could
time
add
I remember
to someone's
I was a
day.
Guest. I was at Epcot and a guest had been collecting pins like for since they started. So like, you know, over 15 years.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, I'm pretty sure, you know, he was getting to the end of his time with Disney. Like he's getting to the end of his time. And he was just like, if just giving away all these pins, like really rare pins. There was like a pin I got that was a limited edition of like 300 from the year 2000 or something. Mm. Just this really nice guy who just had a chat to him, had a chat to him about his life. And he's like, here you guys go. It was really sweet. Like, there is some great guests at the Disney parks, that's for sure. Like, I know we talk about, you know, how great the cast members are a lot of the time in most of the Disney parks around the world, but some of the guests are just as good.
Did you ever come across, I think you were actually with me at the time, but a lady, there were a couple, the lady wore like this huge vest that was just
the
Pooh
Eeyore?
Bear. Yeah, Eeyore and Pooh Bear. And then there was a guy who just wore Darth Vader pins. I thought it was at, no, it was at the Magic Kingdom because I had a pin from Hong Kong.
Right. Yeah.
And she was like, I have never seen that pin before. I need that pin. And she ended up trading me some, like, it was before pin trading was even a thing. It was a Christmas special limited edition, like year 2000 Pooh Bear pin. And she's like, I need your Eeyore pin. It was like an Eeyore stained glass window. And then she got it. But it was that thing where, I was like, oh, yeah, I don't really know if I want to do this. You know, I got that pin and I traded for I was going to give it to my mum, but the moment that she got it, she like started tearing up and getting really emotional. And I was like, oh,
you have like a picture
too,
right?
Yeah. She was like, can I please get a picture with you and all that? I was like, oh, this is really
super
nice.
Sweet.
So, but I guess we should wrap up the park.
We've got two more things. First one is Animagique, which I think is
okay.
It's called a very similar thing to Cinemagique, but it's not quite the same. It's like Donald Duck goes back into the history of the Walt Disney archives sort of thing, and the films come to life. It's like a character show. It's this park's character show.
Yeah.
So think, you know, nowadays, Mickey and the Magical Map, Mickey and the Magician, those sort of things. It's just the original version of that. It had a
Mickey
cool theme.
Mickey
and
the
I think
adjective
it has like,
noun is pretty much what they are
it
now.
Had like a, it has, I think, a
character
blacklight section, if I remember.
Oh, that's
for Pink Elephants on Parade.
Where I thought you were going.
Yeah, it's a cool show. If you get the chance to watch it, I think there's videos of it on YouTube. It's one of those, honestly, you could go to this park and see the three shows and Rock and Roller Coaster and have a good day. Like, you don't need to worry about anything else. Like, and by good day, I mean like a good morning and then just go over to Disneyland Paris.
Yeah.
That's the best way to see this park in its early era. And then an Art of It Disney Animation Building, not quite as good as the one at Disney California Adventure is my favorite version of this one, where it's got the big wraparound screens. But the thing I really like about Art of Disney Animation is you can go and kind of feel like you're a good artist. Like the art academies, they kind of explain it to you, it actually makes you a good artist.
Mm. True.
And it works. I've drawn some weird characters. Thing I like at the Disney California Adventure version, which hopefully comes back, it just has out the front an A-frame with what time every character is.
Yeah.
So you want to draw Goofy? Come back at 10 past 2. Oh, you want to draw Scrooge McDuck? I'll come back at 4:15.
Yeah.
Like you can draw where a lot of the other ones are just, oh, today we're drawing this character and it'll be some character you don't really care about.
Yeah. No, these are probably the two sort of, I don't know, they just don't strike me as unique and really noteworthy. I've seen lots of images and sort of footage of Animagique and it just seems like your sort of bog standard character show. There's no...
I would say it's more unique than the current era of something and Mickey. Mickey and something else.
No, you mean... They say it's got Mickey in it, but Mickey usually goes missing and it's Olaf who has to find them.
Like Mickey's Philhar Magic, which is a Donald show, essentially. But Dom, we can't talk about Animation Courtyard and not talk about the food option.
Oh, please tell
Studio
me more.
Studio Catering Co. food trucks selling pizzas, hot dogs, salads, and desserts. Why does every land have food trucks that just sell pizza, salads, hot dogs, and desserts?
This park is like as big as the like one section of the Disneyland car park. Why do they need like eight different hot dog stands?
And they're all called Studio Catering Co. and they're all food trucks.
I don't get it, but.
But Dom, I think the last thing we need to talk about, if you look at the little map we're looking at, the top right, the meet Disney characters. You can meet Mickey Mouse in a cool costume.
Yep.
What is that at the bottom right of that little section?
Is that a man in a glove? Like a glove man?
I think it's a man in a giant Mickey glove.
Oh, I hate that.
And it's, I think it's the parade called Lights Cinema Parade, which this park has a parade route, apparently.
Yeah, but if you
it
look at it,
it must be a 3-minute parade.
It's like all bendy and it just doesn't work. It looks like it goes through some really tight nooks and crannies.
Yeah, which I think there's an absolute banger of a soundtrack for Disney stars on Cars on Parade or something like that. From this park, and that's the only reason I knew they have a parade, because the absolute banger of a soundtrack that is Disney Cars Stars Parade, whatever it is.
Oh, Walt Disney Studios Park. I guess this is probably the best time to wrap it up. Luke, what are your final takeaways from Walt Disney Studios Park's opening iteration?
Yeah, so as I was saying at the top of the episode, I've never been to Walt Disney Studios Park, and honestly, there's not much that I'm like, damn, I wish I had have experienced this. Because I've experienced Rock and Roller Coaster. I've experienced Light Motors Action. And when we go eventually sometime back to this, like go to this park, back to the park for you for the first time to me, it's going to be a completely different thing.
Yeah.
But it will have Tower of Terror, which has that new unique version of Tower of Terror, where each of the three drops are like a different storyline. It has Crusher's Coaster. It has the Ratatouille ride. It will have Frozen. It'll have Marvel.
Yeah.
It will hopefully have Star Wars. That, and even then, though, when all of that comes in, it's still nothing really that's like, you must go here. Frozen is going to also be at Hong Kong and arguably a better version at Tokyo. You know, Marvel is already opened at DCA. And the only unique thing here is just an overlay of Rock and Roller Coaster. I just wish this park had one good, really you need to come here thing, like, you know, Mystic Manor is for Hong Kong Disneyland.
See, the thing for me is that Disney really learned their lesson with this, because think of, say, Tokyo DisneySea. Think of how little they've had to do to that park. Even though it has quite a small number of attractions, the park itself has enough going on for it that it carries itself. If you just do a couple of attractions, you still feel fulfilled, because it is just a spectacular park. The problem that you've got with a theme park like this and Disney's California Adventure is that even if the attractions are good, if walking between the attractions is a lackluster experience, guess what you end up doing for a majority of your day at a Disney theme park? Walk in between attractions. Attractions only go for about 5 minutes unless you're in line for like an hour. Beyond that, you're just walking around, especially with Fastpass. So you really need to make sure that you get it right, because otherwise you have to do what they're doing now, where it's like, oh, we have to add a whole new section to actually make this park viable. We have to completely change the theme of Disney's California Adventure to make this park viable. Like, I don't think they're going to do this ever again. But I just also don't feel like we're ever going to see like a new Disney park outside of Shanghai within the next decade.
No, not within the next, I would even say 2 decades.
Yeah.
I feel these parks of this era, apart from Disney Sea, kind of forgot that the entire time you're in the theme park, you're getting the impression of the theme park. Mm. It's not just like you put blinders on, walk to the attraction, take off your blinders, experience it. Okay, you're done. Put your blinders back on. Like, the walking between this park where you go to ride Rock and Roller Coaster and it literally looks like a car park.
Yeah.
Like, and then you walk back and you're now going to, you know, go on the Studio Tram Tour and it's got this flat facade. And then you go on it and it's talking about a film you've never heard of.
Mm.
Like, it just, it's a shame, because especially, remember, Disney, they've got like 15 years before they're meant to build a third gate at Disneyland Paris.
Yeah.
Which they extended that. Like, originally that was meant to have been built years ago, and they've extended. But even when they've finished all these new upgrades, I just don't think this is going to be the park it needs to be.
No. It just started with the base of a lackluster theme park. And unfortunately, that's where it's sort of going to stay for
it's
a while.
Stayed,
like, you can't really go beyond
this,
that.
For sure. It's better than this now, but it's gone from a quarter day park to a half day park, essentially.
Yeah. But yeah. I think we wrap things up there. I think this has been a good episode. For those of us who are live, stick around. We'll be doing a Q&A. But other than that, I think that wraps it up for today's episode. We might be coming back next week or sometime in the future. It's sort of talking about the modern iteration of this park.
Yeah.
But that may be a little bit
down the line. We'll see what it ends up with. Like, so, who knows at this stage if they ever get Star Wars or whatever. If you're interested in the future, check out my video on the channel, The Exciting Future of Disney Studios Paris, and hope that it happens. Other than that, thanks for listening.
If you want to get in contact with me, you can reach me at ReviewTimeDumb on Twitter.
I'm at ReviewTimeLuke on Twitter.
And you can find us both at TimeReview and ReviewTime everywhere else. We'll be back next week, unlike the last 3-week break that we had.
Yeah, we can say we're a weekly show again. We'll see you then.
See ya. Review Time's theme podcast is brought to you by Luke Carroll and Dom Lacey. A big shout out goes to our newest patron, which is Kent Keltner. I just had to bring that one up there. Long-term Patreon, Norman Lacey, and to you, the listener. Review Time's theme podcast will be back next week.